Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save, and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine. And as always, it is a pleasure to be with you. It's also great to be back in the podcasting hot seat. So hopefully you are feeling as refreshed and ready to tackle the year ahead as I am, dear listener. And what a topic we have in store today. It is perhaps one of my favorite subject areas that we touch upon on Friends with Money, which is, of course, investing. So what in the world of investing are we going to talk about? Well, given that we are barely into 2025, I think it's a perfect opportunity to, yes, preview the year ahead, but also to take a look back on 2024 and spend a bit of time ruminating on how the markets performed, which companies impressed, and what people were buying. So joining us today to give us his thoughts on those areas and more is Chief Strategy Officer at Target Brokers Australia, Greg Boland. Greg, welcome to Friends with Money.
Thanks very much, and thanks for having me. It's a great pleasure to see you at this early stage of the new year and to reflect on, as you say, 2024 and crystal ball gaze for the 2025 year.
You've stolen my words, Greg. I'm looking forward to it very much so. Well, to start us off and thinking very broadly here, how would you sum up 2024 as a year for investors and for share markets?
It was really a very positive year overall. If you think of the biggest index in terms of world indexes and that sort of thing is the Morgan Stanley Capital Index, and it measures about 1,300 plus stocks in 23 developed countries. And that index was up 19% for the year. And over, if you compare that to a five-year average of around 12%, then that shows it was pretty positive year overall for global markets. In terms of, you know, the themes, I suppose, AI, the US election, inflation, interest rates in the US particularly, we're on every investor's lips in 2024. And since the election, tariffs and taxes and financials and Tesla and crypto have all been on everyone's lips. So the last sort of 2 months or so was slightly different to the rest of the year. And you know, people look at Tesla and as a stock that did so well last year, but it really only performed in the last 2 months. So it's a mixed fortune, really. So the decrease in inflation in the US and globally, and figures from the Australia yesterday showed a decrease in headline inflation, although the underlying inflation figure was slightly higher. Certainty around the US election was definitely having a certain result, whether you like it or not, is always good for markets. Very good returns from the Magnificent Seven stocks, if you like, and that was really a theme as well, the Mag Seven versus the rest. And I suppose the biggest issue of last year was that concentration risk of the Magnificent Seven versus the other 493 stocks on the S&P 500. And we'll maybe dwell on that when we look at the US market a little bit later.
That sounds good. And as you said, it was kind of difficult to escape the Magnificent Seven at times, especially in the first half or three quarters of the year. But let's kick things off by, I guess, starting and focusing on Australia for a bit then, Greg. Can you give us a bit of an idea of how the ASX fared over the course of 2024? You know, was it a good year for the All Ords or the ASX 200 or for any particular sectors in Australia?
Yeah. So if we think of the ASX 200, so that covers most of the market. It was up 10% or so for the year, which is, you know, a good return. But if we look at it, you know, there's data back to 1900. So over that period, the average return is 13%. So 2024 was slightly below. But since 1900, there have been, you know, 100 positive years and 24 not so positive years or negative years. So it was a positive year, which is always good for markets. And in terms of the ASX 200, 133 of a 200 ended up in the black, and the remaining 67 or so ended up in the red. So a mixed bag as always. And in terms of the ratio, that ratio of 133 to 67, again, is slightly below the average as well. So the market did well, but not as well as it has in the past.
And Greg, if you're happy for me to kind of dive down a little bit more and to cherry pick some particular companies out, then were there any companies that you think are worth highlighting for their performance in 2024? You know, whether you know good or bad.
I suppose if we looked at the sectors, the technology sector in Australia was up nearly 50%, and financials up 28%. Whereas in the laggard area, the materials sector was down 17%, and energy down 18%. And when you compare that with, say, the S&P 500 sectors, they only had one in the red, which was energy as well. So there's relative underperformance in these sectors compared to, say, global trends, although technology and financials definitely were in the same light as the others.
And you mentioned the US there, or the S&P 500 there, Greg. Let's move our conversation on to markets beyond Australia, because obviously so many Australians and, you know, people around the world are invested in markets outside of their home countries. So to start off, how did, I guess, the major US indexes fare in 2024? You've already mentioned the S&P 500 there, but if you want to kind of dig into that or any of the others, that would be fantastic.
Okay, so in terms of the US, obviously, why is it so important? Well, out of that MSCI of the 23 countries, the US is actually 73% of it. So it is a dominant player or dominant market in global equity markets. The S&P 500 benchmark is the S&P 500, and it defied forecasts for, you know, a modest return and actually returned 23% for the year.
Wow.
But as I said, the biggest issue has been the concentration returns of the Magnificent Seven stocks, being Apple, Amazon, Google, Alphabet, Microsoft, Nvidia, and obviously Tesla. And if we strip out those seven stocks and look at the other 493, even though the return on the index overall was 23%, the return on the other 493 stocks was only 8.1%. So that's,
wow,
you know, weaker than US market, weaker than Europe, weaker than Canada, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas the return of a Mag 7 stocks was actually 67% and dominated the market. They also dominate the MSCI. And so if we dwell even further on that in terms of the contrast, the fourth quarter was a pretty mixed bag of equity returns, but the Magnificent 7 stocks gained 16% during that period, dominated probably mostly by Tesla. Whereas in the other 493 stocks actually returned a negative number, -1% for that quarter. And so the US sectors, you know, communications overall for the year was up around nearly 40%. IT was up around 37%. And the only negative return in the US was materials at -1%. Energy, healthcare, and real estate all sort of under 2% return. So definitely a mixed return during the year. And if you look at the actual individual stocks in the US, Palantir, the S&P 500 was the biggest gainer, up 326%. Vistra Energy, 277%. And Nvidia up 177%. And, you know, if you look at all those Magnificent Seven stocks, it's interesting that Meta was second in terms of return for the year, around 65%. And yet that doesn't feature in our own clients' trading. They tend to trade different other types of stocks. Tesla, Apple, and Nvidia dominate. But, you know, some of these other Mag 7 stocks aren't even featured in our top 20 stocks that clients actually trade. The worst performing stocks in the US were Walgreens, Boots Alliance, Moderna, and Intel, were all down 60% plus for last year.
I'm glad you mentioned what Tiger Brokers customers have been doing there, Greg, because it's something that always fascinates me. I'd love to hear what other people are doing. So beyond those stocks that you've already mentioned, what were people looking at? What were people buying? What were people selling on the platform?
In terms of the trades and the stocks that people on the Tiger Brokers Australia platform, so we're looking, concentrating just on our Australian clients, it was really dominated in the stock area by Nvidia, Tesla, Apple, Supermicro, AMD, Microsoft, and Palantir, and Google, in the sort of top 10 of stocks. And that was similar across the cohorts in terms of stocks and ETFs traded in different age groups as well. So if we look at the 18 to 27-year-old cohort, they traded NVIDIA, Tesla, and then various other stocks around those or ETFs around those. Similar in the other age groups. 60 plus, they tend to trade stocks more than ETFs or leveraged ETFs, whereas the younger group tend to trade sometimes leveraged ETFs on individual stocks. So if you look at the ETFs that were traded, the dominant one for all our clients was what's called Soxel, Sox, S-O-X.
Oh, okay.
Is a ticker code for the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index, and there's an ETF on it, which is a leveraged ETF. So SOXL is that code, L for long, so SOX long the index, was a dominant one. And then the second was actually YIN. So the Chinese market definitely had a surge from around October, when there was changes to some of the policies in the Chinese market. And so there's two ETFs in the US. One's called YIN, obviously going up, and Yang, market going down. And both of those featured in the top 10 ETFs that were traded by Australian clients. The other ones tend to be related to indices, such as long the NASDAQ or short the NASDAQ, long the S&P 500, which is the SPY or the BOO, Vanguard S&P 500 ETF. But one that wasn't there, obviously, year before, but in 2024, there was the introduction of ETFs on Bitcoin. Mm. And the dominant player or the dominant ETF in that is the iShares or the BlackRock featured ETF that goes by the code of IBIT. And that's more or less doubled in price from where it launched in mid-January. So this launch of ETFs in Bitcoin was one of the highlights of the year, both in terms of price appreciation, but also inflows into ETF funds. And the ETF funds globally, there was about $1.1 trillion of inflows into these ETFs, of which most was into index ones, but there was also some of our clients traded, obviously, the IBITs, treasury bond type ETFs, and then also leveraged, there's actually leveraged ETFs on things like NVIDIA, NVDL instead of NVDA, which is the stock code, but NVDL is a ETF, which is two times the upside of NVIDIA. So quite a few people traded the ETFs where they're leveraged to the either an index or particular individual stock. The only commodity ETF that was traded in our top 20 was the ETF Boil, B-O-I-L, which is on natural gas. And that was really the only one that was a commodity-related ETF that was traded by Tiger Australia clients in 2024.
It's fascinating, and as I said, asking you that question, Greg, it's always so interesting to hear about what other people are doing, and to hear about some tickers that I'd never heard of before. So fascinating stuff. I think we've done justice completely to 2024. So if you don't mind, let's turn our focus towards 2025 now and the year ahead. I know this is a very tricky question. I always ask it anyway, but because everyone listening will be interested to hear your thoughts, I know. How do you think markets will fare in 2025? Is there anything that you're anticipating or anything that you'll be, I guess, watching out for this year?
So in terms of the market ended last year, the last 3 days ended in a bit of a thud. Mm. The market sold off, and then people often talk about this thing called the Santa Claus Rally, which is sort of the 24th of, the trading day of the 24th of December through to the second trading day of the year for that 7-day period, and whether the market went up or down, and as a bit of a predictor of what will happen in 2025. And the market ended up down over that period. So this premise of a Santa Claus Rally didn't eventuate, and sometimes that means that the index for the year will end up lower by the end of the year, and sometimes it doesn't. So, that's on the negative aspect, the market started not so flash, and it's been pretty up and down over the last 9 days or so. The S&P 500 so far year to date is up 0.6%. You know, the reporting season starts pretty much in earnest in about a week's time with the US banks reporting. So it'll be interesting to see how they report and whether they can appreciate further given the big jump in the financial sector after the US election. And, you know, on the day of a result, a lot of those stocks, the Goldmans and the JP Morgans, et cetera, were up a sort of 10 to 15%. So whether this financial reporting for Q4 will actually show any benefit or upside will be interesting to see how the market sort of starts off. Equity strategists at Goldman Sachs have stated that with moderate earnings growth rates, we expect slower index returns than we have experienced in recent years. Over the course of 25, and we forecast a total return of the S&P 500 of 10%. Most forecasters are in the same range, 10 to 15% for the year. And you've got to remember, these same people had a fairly modest view of 2024, and yet 2024 and the S&P 500 was actually overall a good year, albeit that it was dominated by the Mag 7. But if we look at the one-year return after US election for the last three times, so the beginning of Obama's second term when he got elected, the 12 months after that, the market appreciated 27%. Trump after the first year, after his election in 2016, and Biden's after his election in 2020, the market appreciated in that first year around 24%. So, you know, we've already seen some of that upside, but not a huge amount. And so, you know, my view is sort of that 10 to 15%. I think we might be at the upper end of it, albeit I think it's going to be pretty choppy in the first 3 months. And, you know, we may see the market down, 5 to 10% over the first while, and then hopefully rally early towards the end of the year, with the premise that, you know, usually August, September, October, pretty tough months in equity markets. So in terms of predictions for the year, you know, the ETF volume last year was 1.1 trillion inflows, the biggest ever by quite a margin. And so, you know, if the indexes look like they may rally further, then big inflows into those. I think the AI wave continues. It's still in early days and how this market will actually develop. The other themes that have been sort of mentioned towards the end of last year and whether you think that's good or bad are robotics, space, and also quantum computing. But the quantum computing sector got a bit of a bucket of cold water thrown on it yesterday when the CEO of NVIDIA sort of stated that he didn't see quantum computing to actually be viable or actually make any inroads for another sort of 10 to 20 years. So that whole premise that quantum computing may be the next best thing, maybe probably got a bit of a hiding overnight. We've got Trump back in the White House. We've got US rates probably not moving as much as they could. And China and Bitcoin being sort of newer themes that people can now trade more. And particularly ETFs on China and Bitcoin should be of interest to investors, particularly if the Chinese market, the freeing up of economic policy that was started in October continues. And then sort of also the stocks that benefit from Trump, which are the semiconductors, oil, cryptos, any of the stocks that supported Trump, like Tesla, defense companies, and sort of agricultural companies. So I think there's a mixture of stocks in the US that will benefit from Trump.
Plenty and plenty more to look out for then. Greg, we have covered off an absolute ton of stuff today. And by we, I mean you. You've definitely been the star player in today's episode. So many thanks for joining us on Friends of Money. It's been a pleasure chatting and really appreciate all the insights that you've given us and everyone listening.
And thank you and best wishes to you and all your viewers for 2025. And hopefully it's another positive year for equities and for your own investing experience. And
I hope so too, Greg. I hope so too.
Good luck with that.
Thank you. That's it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast. But don't forget to jump on our website, moneymag.com.au, for your daily dose of financial news. Or you can go grab yourself a copy of the latest edition of Money Magazine in all good newsagents. As always, Friends with Money will be right back in your podcast feeds next week. So until then, my name is Tom Watson. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.